From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. 16 young Alaskans have brought a major lawsuit against their state over their compromised future from the coming climate catastrophe. This week, attorneys argued on behalf of the young plaintiffs at the Alaska Supreme Court. Alaska is a unique state in that its pristine glaciers and sensitive ecology faces a grave threat from climate change. But its government is heavily dependent on the fossil fuel industry and actively promotes the development of oil and gas. We turn now to Andrew Welly. He is a staff attorney with the group Our Children's Trust. Welcome to the program, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about who the plaintiffs are. When we hear the title Our Children's Trust, what comes to mind is the federal lawsuit that is wending its way through the court system of a number of youth plaintiffs arguing that their constitutional rights are being violated because the government's inaction on climate change and its active promotion of fossil fuels. How does this Alaska lawsuit fit within that?
Yes. So this is also a youth-led constitutional climate lawsuit, just like Juliana versus United States, the federal lawsuit that you mentioned. And they're both actually not based on inaction. They're based on affirmative government conduct that makes climate change worse. So in Alaska, the focus of this lawsuit is on the state's energy policy. They've enacted a statute that declares that it's the state of Alaska's policy to promote fossil fuels. And in implementing that policy, they're actively making climate change worse in ways that contribute to the injuries of the 16 young plaintiffs from all over the state of Alaska who are being harmed by wildfires, acidifying oceans, impacts to the salmon that they rely on for their subsistence diets. And for some of these plaintiffs, climate change is actually destroying and wiping their homes and native villages off the map because of sea level rise and thawing permafrost and loss of sea ice.
Tell me a little bit about the plaintiffs. Some of them are quite young.
They are. So when we filed this lawsuit, the plaintiffs were ranged in age between 5 and 20. It's now 2 years later, so they're between the ages of 7 and 22. But they're from communities all across the large state of Alaska, from the Aleutian Islands to Barrier Islands on the Chukchi Sea. Our lead plaintiff, Esau Sinek, is from the native village of Shishmaref, which is a small community on a barrier island, as I mentioned, where he and the rest of his community rely almost solely on subsistence diets, harvesting sea animals from the Chukchi Sea, as well as local fish and wildlife there. And that island, actually, because of the loss of sea ice and increasingly frequent and severe storms and flooding, is actually washing his home into the sea. And the community is faced with a situation in which they're being forced to relocate from their ancestral home that they've occupied for thousands of years. Other plaintiffs are from around the Anchorage area, from Juneau, from the interior of Alaska and Fairbanks, and they've all are showing and experiencing these profound harms of climate change now.
How dependent is the state on fossil fuels? Or I should say, how dependent does it choose to be on fossil fuels? For those of us living outside Alaska, we may not realize just how intertwined the industry is with the state government.
Yeah, the state of Alaska does get a lot of their revenue from oil and gas development. But a recent report actually came out that recreation in the state of Alaska actually contributes more to the Alaskan economy than oil and gas does.
So things like tourism?
Exactly.
Forgive my ignorance here, but do individual Alaskans also get tax benefits that sort of, have resulted in a kind of public buy-in to the fossil fuel industry?
Well, Alaska has what's called the Permanent Fund, and it's basically a trust account that has been set up by the state, and it's funded by revenues from oil and gas development, and individuals within the state of Alaska receive dividends from that fund on a yearly basis.
And is that part of how the state keeps that industry closely aligned with itself?
I think there's a strong relationship between the state and oil and gas development, and that's part of the premise of this suit, is that, you know, the economics and the economic future of the state of Alaska, in addition to the health of its residents, is going to be negatively impacted by continuing oil and gas development.
So let's get right to the case itself. The case is called Sinek versus the State of Alaska, Sinek for the lead plaintiff in the case. And there was a hearing on Wednesday at the Alaska Supreme Court. Give me a brief sense of summary, if you will, of the path that this lawsuit has taken to get where it got.
So this lawsuit was filed in October of 2017, and the first thing that we saw in this case was a motion to dismiss from Alaska's government. And essentially everything that we've been arguing about in this case so far is whether the courts have a duty to assess and make a decision on the constitutionality of the state's affirmative promotion of fossil fuels. Essentially everything that we've been arguing so far is whether the courts can review the merits of plaintiff's claims. And the Superior Court Judge Gregory Miller sided with the state of Alaska, and he said that the courts cannot review that policy. But on Wednesday, we had a hearing with the Alaska Supreme Court in an appeal of that decision. And we argued on behalf of the plaintiffs that the courts in Alaska actually have a constitutional duty to decide whether the state's statutory energy policy of promoting fossil fuels, thereby making climate change worse, violates these plaintiffs' fundamental constitutional rights. And I think the judges were receptive to those arguments.
So tell us a little bit about how those arguments went.
So the justices on the Alaska Supreme Court, there were four of them present. Chief Justice Bolger was not present, but they had great questions for both sides. But I think they indicated that the state of Alaska and Alaska's courts are well equipped to decide constitutional issues such as are present in this case. And they asked of the opposing counsel for the state of Alaska why it would be different in this case than any other, why they couldn't declare that constitutional issues were present here, and whether there's a right to a stable climate system capable of sustaining human life.
So what's next for this specific case?
Right. So now we're waiting on a decision from the Alaska Supreme Court, and we're hopeful that it will be a decision in plaintiff's favor, allowing the case to go forward. And in that event, we would go back to the Superior Court and Judge Gregory Miller to argue the merits of the claims and whether the state's promotion of fossil fuels and harming these young people is inconsistent with Alaska's constitution.
How significant is this case? If it were to succeed, if the lawsuit were to succeed, what would it represent for, you know, the sort of legal challenge or the legal fight to stop climate change?
Mm-hmm. So a declaration, which we're seeking in this case, that government actions that affirmatively contribute to climate change violate fundamental human rights would be very consequential for litigation across the world, because every government protects human rights through their constitutions, and they have similar obligations not to affirmatively contribute to climate change.
Would this case have an impact on the federal lawsuit, the Juliana versus United States?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I think it would. They're different jurisdictions and different courts, so each court is bound by the precedent that it sets in a given case in future cases and is guided by those precedents. But the federal government could look to the Alaska Supreme Court for guidance and as a persuasive matter to inform the federal litigation as well.
And where does that federal suit stand right now in terms of its legal path?
Yes, on June 4th, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals heard a hearing in Juliana versus United States on several issues in the case, including whether the plaintiffs in that case had standing, whether they were personally injured by the government's causation of climate change, and whether they have a fundamental right to a stable climate system. And we're awaiting a decision from the Ninth Circuit on those issues and whether plaintiffs can continue to trial to testimony and evidence about the ways that they're being impacted by the federal government's causation of climate change.
Now, do you find that it's a little bit difficult to make the case that these young people's future is going to be impacted because you're talking about something that hasn't happened yet? So they will be hurt because all indications point, scientific evidence points to that, but they have not yet been hurt. And unfortunately, a lot of times our government only takes action after harm has been caused. At that point, it will be too late for us all.
Sonali, I don't think that those arguments are hard to make at all, because it's not the case that these young people are not being harmed yet. They're significantly feeling the effects of climate change already today. As I mentioned, for instance, Esau's village is being wiped into the sea by climate change. And those impacts are happening today, and they will get worse in the future, but they're very real in this instance right now.
So let's stay on Alaska for a little bit longer in terms of the real evidence that we're seeing of climate change. There are very terrifying sort of before and after photos from several decades ago to now of melted glaciers, of where the ice recedes in the summer. What are the indicators that you see quite strongly that suggest that this is a, you know, a train that has left the station, if you will?
Yeah, Alaska is warming at twice the rate of the rest of the world, as is the rest of the Arctic. And they've already seen significant temperature increases here in Alaska, massive loss of sea ice in the Arctic in ways that is impacting many of the native villages on the Alaska coast, because that sea ice comes in later and later. And whereas it used to protect many of these villages from storm surge, and other storms in October and November, that ice is no longer there to protect these villages. And flooding is coming in, endangering the lives and the health of many of the residents of those villages. We're seeing an increase in the number of days in which wildfires are occurring in Alaska, and larger and more dangerous wildfires filling the airs with smoke and exacerbating asthma and respiratory illnesses for many of Alaska's residents. We're seeing impacts to marine species. Polar bears and walruses that are dependent on sea ice no longer have that ice to support their habitat. We're seeing a decrease in the salmon that were once so abundant in Alaska's waters that are being harmed by rapidly warming waters and ocean acidification. We're seeing impacts across all of the ecosystems in Alaska really in alarming ways that are getting worse every year.
Now, the federal government also has a role to play in Alaska's fossil fuel industry, right? I mean, there have been efforts to develop the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and to have oil and gas exploration. And the federal government has power over some of the leases on oil and gas. So the federal government also bears a responsibility directly when it comes to Alaska, right?
There's a jurisdictional overlay, and different governments and jurisdictions who are responsible for various levels of permitting with oil and gas in Alaska, depending on if it's on federal lands or waters or state lands. But the state of Alaska has exercised authority with respect to oil and gas drilling, even on federal lands. So there really is a constitutional obligation and a human rights aspect of this for every government that's involved to not affirmatively use their authority in ways that contributes to climate change.
Now, is there a broad consensus in the public in Alaska that this lawsuit is really important, that the concerns that the young plaintiffs are bringing forward are so important that people realize that they are all being impacted? Or is the public split in Alaska?
I can't speak for the public as a whole, but I can say we have had a groundswell of support from local communities and individuals in Alaska, and a strong turnout at the hearing on Wednesday of people standing up in support of these youth and their constitutional rights in the face of the climate crisis in which all Alaskans find themselves.
And I'm assuming that some of these young folks participated in some of the recent climate-related actions and protest actions. There have been, of course, there's been a youth-led movement developing worldwide with the Fridays for Future events, the global climate strike. Did you see actions like that in Alaska as well?
There were actions across Alaska and Fairbanks and Juneau and here in Anchorage as well. And some of our plaintiffs in this case were instrumental in lifting their voices up in those actions as well.
So what are ways in which you hope that the public can support this sort of lawsuit? Because these lawsuits, both the federal level and the Alaska level lawsuit, are tackling issues that we are all worried about, that all of us are impacted by, and unfortunately our courts, at least at the federal level, our court system has become deeply politicized and deeply partisan, especially our nation's highest court. And so it's a little bit scary, at least at the federal level, to leave these decisions just to the court and resign this as a legal fight alone. It does matter, doesn't it, when there is a tremendous public pressure that, for example, especially the Supreme Court justices see on a particular issue?
Yeah, well, first I'd like to say I think that climate change is a scientific issue and it's been improperly politicized and there's a lot of misinformation out there. And but I do think that the general public is now being educated in a way that brings that to light. But I do think that all citizens in America and in Alaska should be concerned about the health of their democracy and realize that all three branches of government have crucial roles to play in with respect to the climate crisis. And in terms of a healthy democracy, when you have government knowledge of the dangers of climate change and those same government bodies, the legislative and the executive branches, in the midst of that knowledge, are pursuing policies that actively make climate change worse and endanger the most vulnerable young people and future generations, it's up to the courts to decide issues of whether that's constitutional. And all Americans and all Alaskans should have an interest in making sure that courts fulfill their duty to address those claims.
What are the sort of state government level political, what is the landscape at the political level in terms of how people are pressuring state government officials, the governor, the state legislature, to start moving in the right direction, to start ending that alliance with the fossil fuel industry?
There are a lot of great grassroots organizations in Alaska and throughout the nation who are putting pressure on members of Congress and state legislatures to reverse their policies, which now contribute to climate change, and to do their job under the Constitution to pull back from oil and gas development. So, and do the opposite essentially of what they're doing now. Whereas what we're seeing from governments now in the face of climate crisis, in many instances, is doubling down on fossil fuels, like the Trump administration is doing now, or Alaska's affirmative promotion of fossil fuels in the face of the climate crisis, in which Alaska is extremely vulnerable, people are pressuring their legislatures and their members of Congress to reverse course and instead put in policies that protect people from climate change and reduce emissions at rates that are called for by science as necessary to protect people's constitutional rights.
Are Indigenous communities in Alaska taking the lead, as we've seen happen elsewhere in the country, in the US and the world, you know, in places like Canada as well? We are seeing Indigenous communities who have much greater wisdom than non-Indigenous communities in terms of how to live sustainably alongside nature instead of exploiting nature. Are they taking, and as you mentioned, some of your plaintiffs in the Alaska case are from Indigenous communities, are Indigenous youth. Are these communities taking a lead in some of the grassroots efforts?
They are, absolutely. And, I think that it's important to bring in traditional knowledge from those Native communities in informing what solutions look like in effectuating a just transition to a constitutional energy system in Alaska and in America as a whole. And those voices are instrumental, and many of them have been rising up individually and also in support of the youth in this case, who include many Alaska Natives here. And we've actually had the support of many grassroots and Indigenous communities in this case. The Alaska Intertribal Council and the IAC Preservation Committee submitted a amicus brief or a friend of the court brief in support of these young plaintiffs. And they detailed all of the ways in which Alaska Natives are being profoundly impacted by climate change in terms of their ability to transmit their cultural knowledge to future generations and the ways that climate is impacting many of their subsistence lifestyles.
And is the within the context of the Alaska lawsuit, are the judges asking, how does one replace the fossil fuel revenues that the state relies on? Is there a discussion of, for example, a state level Green New Deal, a rebuilding of the economy, or is that out of the scope of the lawsuit?
We did have some questions at the hearing on Wednesday from the justices about what relief would look like in this case and what transition looks like. That's getting a little bit ahead of where we are now in the lawsuit, which is the arguments on Wednesday pertained solely to whether the courts can even decide whether promotion of fossil fuels in Alaska is repugnant to Alaska's constitution. But that transition would be effectuated by the legislative and executive branches, because it's up to them in the first instance to make sure that their policies are in line with the Constitution, and they set the specifics of that policy. But those determinations, in the wake of a successful decision for plaintiffs, would be informed by the best available science and by the economics in Alaska, which really show that continued fossil fuel reliance is not in the economic best interest of the state of Alaska.
Right. And as you mentioned, there are other industries such as recreation and tourism that the state can rely on. I'm thinking of recently the Bahamas, a country that is heavily dependent on tourism, and two of their major islands have just been so devastated by a climate change fueled hurricane system, which of course then makes it harder for a country like that to continue to be dependent on an industry like tourism. So in many ways, one could say very clearly that the fossil fuel industry in Alaska is directly impacting the tourism industry in Alaska. And then, you know, the state really can choose which industry brings in more and which is better for the state's future as well. Is there a website that you can give out where people can find out more, not just about the Alaska lawsuit, but also the federal lawsuit?
Absolutely, Sonali. So if you go to ourchildrenstrust.org, you can find a lot of very helpful information, not only about the Alaska lawsuit, but the federal lawsuit and our lawsuits in Washington and Florida, as well as information about international cases throughout the globe in which young people are rising up and demanding climate justice as a matter of their fundamental human rights.
So there are suits similar to the one in Alaska and other states and other parts of the world as well.
There are.
Well, Andrew, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll certainly monitor how this lawsuit proceeds. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sonali.
Andrew Welly is a staff attorney with Our Children's Trust. We've been discussing the Alaska lawsuit brought by young people over the issue of climate change. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.